Good morning, church. I really appreciate the time of singing this morning, Tommy. That was so encouraging and so good to be surrounded by brothers and sisters in Christ who love to worship and pour themselves not only into the singing but into our times of prayer and the Lord's Supper. It's just it's a beautiful thing. And I don't know. I guess that's why I lost my voice is from singing really, really hard today. Not yesterday, today. Singing really, really hard. No, it's been an exciting weekend. It's been a good thing. And I feel like sometimes that maybe I'm a little greedy because when I'm not here, I miss our time together. And I want us to be together and worshiping and singing all the time. What do you think of when I say the word greed? I mean, what images pop to your mind when we say the word greed? Maybe you think of, if you're of a certain generation, images like this. Scrooge McDuck, right? Swimming in a pool of gold coins. Or maybe you picture, you know, fat cat corporate bigwigs lighting their cigars with $100 bills and then raking it in off the labors of the, you know, just the average Joe and living the big life, right? And sure, those are examples of greed, don't get me wrong, but they're pretty exaggerated examples. And I started thinking, like, when we think of greed, why do we think of those sorts of images? People who are living in, you know, multi-million dollar estates with, you know, money to waste. Why is that greed? And I think it's because that's not very realistic for most of us anyway. You know, I don't think I'll ever do either one of those things. I'll probably never swim in a pool of gold coins. I'll probably never light my, you know, $1,000 cigars with $100 bills. Probably never going to happen. And yet, because I don't do that, I'll just get to think, therefore, I'm not greedy. Because I don't do those things, therefore, I must not be greedy. But the truth of the matter is, it's a lot more difficult to point out greed in your life and my life. It's tougher to make a cartoon out of the sort of greed you and I sort of wrestle with, because it's one of the most natural desires in the world. You know, I think to myself, I don't want to be, you know, chairman of the board, Rich. I just need a little bit more, right? A little more salary, a little more house, a little more time off, a little more comfortable car or truck. I just need a little bit more. One of my very favorite songs by the Avett Brothers is a song called Ill With Want. And he's got this lyric in there that goes like this. It says, the more I have, the more I think I'm almost where I need to be. If only I could get a little more. Well, our world, I think we could all agree, and the writer of Ecclesiastes would agree, that our world is a messed up place. Our world's filled with injustice and oppression and suffering. And I mean, there are bad people out there doing bad things to good people. And he's been talking about this at the end of chapter 3. We talked about it last week. We're going to talk about it just a little bit this week. But with all this wickedness going on, the writer, at one point, in fact, in chapter 4, he says, it'd be better off if you're better off as the person who died than the person who's alive. And it's because he said it's better to, you know, to have died than to not be living through all this terrible wickedness and injustice. In fact, it'd be better if you were never born at all. That'd be better than having to, at least you never get to experience all the wickedness that way. He's trying to think, what can you do? I mean, how can you avoid all of this corruption? What are we supposed to do to battle against this terribleness out there? And the real question that comes to is how are we supposed to protect ourselves from all of the wickedness out there? All of the wickedness out there, all the bad stuff going on, and whether you're thinking on an international level, nation against nation, or a community level, and people in your community who are taking advantage of others, or on a personal level, you know, people in your life who have hurt you and taken advantage of you. How are we supposed to protect ourselves from all of the wickedness out there? And for a lot of people, especially maybe in our society, but I would argue really worldwide, a lot of people, the answer to that question kind of goes back to greed, at least in a way, because we think the answer to protection is self-sufficiency. The writer of Ecclesiastes puts it this way. He says, "Then I saw all the toil and all the skill and work come from one person's envy of another." And what he's saying is, I'm looking over there and you've got all this and you've got all this great stuff. Boy, I wish my life was like yours. And I'm going to work and I'm going to work and I'm going to work and I'm going to get more and more and more. And he says, this too, this also is a vanity, a chasing after the wind. And skipping down to verses 7 and 8, he says, "Again, I saw vanity under the sun." Vanity, futility, you know, it's a lost cause. And he says, the case of solitary individuals without brothers or sons, and yet there's no end to all their toil, and their eyes are never satisfied with riches. "For whom am I toiling, they said, and depriving myself of pleasure? This also is vanity, an unhappy business." He's saying, he's looking, he's trying to find meaning in life, right? And he goes, you work and you work and you work and you work and you try to build some sort of protection, some sort of hedge, some sort of buffer against all the evil out there in the world. And you're like, only if I only had some more money, or if I only had enough cushion, enough stuff so that I didn't have to interact with all that. Like I could be self-sufficient and I didn't need anyone and I don't need anything. And if I had all of that, then I could just rest and enjoy it. That's what we tell ourselves. If I only had all of this that I need, then I could rest and enjoy it. That's the lie we tell ourselves. And boy, that sounds good, doesn't it? Because we have this tendency to think that when we have more, that more means an easier life, that more means a safer life, that more means a better life. I mean, it is undergirding every piece of advertising you and I see, that if you had this thing, whatever this thing is, your life would be better. Man, after a time, you can tell yourself, I tell myself, I don't pay any attention to those ads. I don't pay any attention to those ads. But before long, you know, I find myself buying some of that same stuff that's been advertised to me, or thinking that I need maybe one more thing. And he says, and the truth is, in our society, I tell myself, you know, I don't have any money. I can't afford to buy that. And I'm hoping that this next thing will be enough, but I can't even afford the next thing. But in our society, even when you don't have the money to spend, we can spend anyway. We can buy stuff. We can buy stuff not only that we don't need, we can buy stuff that nobody needs, right? I mean, we can find stuff that we'll buy and we'll stick it in a closet and forget we have it until we have to move it. Sometimes it's been said that credit cards are like when you start at the bottom and then you start digging. And you can get yourself in a big hole even when you start from the bottom, right? And the Bible is filled with warnings time and again against the dangers of confusing having the stuff or having the material wealth, confusing having stuff with having God's blessing. When that's really what we need, it's God's blessing and not the stuff. Over and over, God encourages us to be content. Sure, it's done here in Ecclesiastes, but the Apostle Paul, he teaches a lot about it in his writings and he writes especially to young Timothy to learn how to be content. Jesus preaches about it, about how important it is for us to find our place with God and be content with that. But that is a lesson that is really hard to learn. Because the problem is we're so focused on having more stuff that we can see, feel, taste, and touch, that we miss out. Because the thing is, here's a little secret between me and you, we actually do need more. The problem is we're confused about what we need more of. I think, and you probably think too, that what we need more of is a good bank account or house or car. But the writer of Ecclesiastes says, no, no, no. That's just what you think you need. That's not what you actually need. And this is what he goes on to say. He says, two are better than one, for they have a good reward for their toil. For if they fall, one will lift up the other. But woe to the one who is alone and falls and does not have another to help. Again, if two lie together, they keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? And though one might prevail against another, two will withstand one. A threefold cord is not quickly broken. Y'all heard this passage before? You're familiar with it, right? He's saying, look, you want protection, you want safety, you want meaning, and we try to find all that stuff in work or in possessions, and inevitably, what you're going to find out is that we're alone in a really difficult situation. We're trying to survive our minds, and we tell ourselves, this is what the world says about itself, is it's a dog-eat-dog world out there. You heard that? It's a dog-eat-dog world out there, and so we think, oh, I got to be the biggest, baddest dog in the room. But the problem is there's always a bigger, badder dog out there. I mean, there is always something more than we can handle in our world. And then what happens? What happens when I'm just the second biggest, baddest dog out there? Well, the preacher of Ecclesiastes says that the very best investment you can make in life is not going to be a financial one. It's not going to be investing in your work. It's not going to be investing in your 401k. It's not going to be investing in real estate. The best investment we can make is in a relationship. We get the best return on investment over any other investment we can make. Investing in people is what actually is what we need. Now, some people try to accumulate possessions, and some are trying to get not necessarily more possessions, but maybe better possessions. The late Malcolm Forbes says, the one who is attributed to have saying, he who dies with the most toys wins. That's a terrible game. I mean, what kind of game is it that you win, but you don't get to enjoy it? I mean, that's just a losing game no matter what. If we spend all of our lives trying to accumulate more and more possessions, we may win and be absolutely miserable. Never be happy, never be fulfilled. You can have, and what the writer of Ecclesiastes points out is like, look, you can have a really hard job that you love, but if you're doing it surrounded by people you hate, the job you love becomes the job you hate, you know? You can be doing something you love, surrounded by people who don't love you and you don't get along with, and all of a sudden that job, that stuff you like doing, hate going to work for that. Conversely, he says, if you're doing a long, hard job, then you may not really like the labor at all, but if you're doing it surrounded by people who love you and whom you love, all of a sudden the job gets a lot easier. I've had some bad jobs in my day. I'm not saying this is one of them. I would never say that to you. But I've had some bad jobs. But the worst jobs were jobs that I didn't actually mind the labor. I remember one of my very first jobs, I was clearing land that had been repossessed by the bank. My dad worked at a bank, and so I got one of those cushy, you know, jobs you get because you're the son of a banker. I was clearing land with an axe and a machete all day, every day. I mean, I know you're jealous, because I was making $4.50 an hour. I was raking it in, and I was clearing all this land with everything that was smaller than I could reach my hands around, cut it down with an axe or chop it up with a machete, and I was doing this for all summer by myself. Nobody to talk to. Just me out there. And this was like, I didn't have any headphones or anything. I didn't have any music. Just me and the axe and the machete and 100-degree Texas heat. It was a beautiful, beautiful job. I remember thinking, this is the worst job ever. I would drive by people working at McDonald's, think, man, these people are so lucky. They're in air conditioning. They have people they can talk to. What could be wrong with that, right? And I didn't mind being outside. I didn't mind being in the woods. I like both of those things. I didn't mind cutting down trees and clearing out brush. I liked the way the lot looked when I got done. But I was doing it by myself. It made it really hard. And conversely, I did construction. And I was doing, I mean, it was hard work. I was doing stuff I absolutely hated. Yeah, I was outside, but I was outside on a big slab of concrete or blacktop, and man, I was doing stuff that was so hard. But I had a couple of coworkers who were pretty funny, and we'd cut up and laugh all day, and all of a sudden, a bad job kind of goes by. That's what Ecclesiastes is saying. He said, to work on a really hard job, and you get a return for your labors. And when things go sideways, and inevitably we know things are going to go sideways, it won't matter how much money or stuff you have saved up if you don't have the support of another person. It will not matter how much you have saved up if you are by yourself. We need one another. We need people. You need somebody in your life that you can call in the at 2 o'clock in the morning. Just out of the blue, just call them at 2 in the morning, and their question is not going to be what's wrong before they decide what they're going to do. You need somebody that when you call them at 2 in the morning, their only question is, where are you, as they're getting dressed? Because they're coming to you no matter what. That's the sort of relationships we need to be investing in having friends like that, in being friends like that. And as the preacher in Ecclesiastes points out, the world is a cold, hard place. And if we don't have people who love us and whom we love, it becomes unbearably cold and hard. Have you ever stopped to think about like Jesus' last night of freedom? I mean, the night he was in the upper room, he had his Passover meal with his closest disciples, with his apostles. He shared that meal, and then he goes down to the Garden of Gethsemane, and he goes down to pray before this terrible ordeal that he's facing, his arrest and trial and crucifixion. And he asks Peter, James, and John to come with him and to keep watch. Remember, they fall asleep. And it always kind of struck me, why would Jesus do that? Why would Jesus ask these guys to come with him? What are they going to do? I mean, what could the Son of God, God made flesh, possibly need from three out-of-work fishermen? What are they going to do? And yet here was Jesus in his hour of need, asking for his friends' presence and support and prayers. Brothers and sisters, we sometimes paint the ideal. The ideal, the perfect situation is me not needing anyone, is you not needing anyone or anything from anyone. But if Jesus needed the support and encouragement of other people, who are you and I to think that we don't? If Jesus needed the love and support and encouragement of other people, why do you think you don't? Are we thinking we're better than Jesus? I'd like to think I'm stronger than Jesus. It's probably not true. But we'd like to think so, wouldn't we? The writer of Ecclesiastes was not writing like a prophet. He's not preaching so much as he is looking at the way the world is. And the way the world is, brothers and sisters, you and I, we need somebody. We need somebody. We were made for relationship with God, but we were made for relationship with one another as well. We need somebody. And if you need somebody this morning, we want to be somebody with you, somebody for you. If we can help you with your relationships to love and on you, encourage you, lift you up in prayer for strength, we want to do that. If there's anything we can do for you this morning, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?